This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge. State lawmakers have 10 days before the next temporary budget expires. The General Assembly has passed three continuing resolutions since the beginning of the fiscal year due to a stalemate in budget negotiations. And among the sticking points are several environmental issues. The House and Senate are still arguing over whether to extend the state's solar energy tax credit, whether they should place a cap on renewable energy development, or how strict water quality standards should be for Jordan Lake. WUNC environment reporter Dave DeWitt has been following the General Assembly's negotiations over environmental issues in the budget, and he joins me in the studio. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Phoebe.
Let's start with Jordan Lake. There's a strategy in place to clean up the lake, which provides drinking water for 300,000 people in the Triangle area. Some makers want to delay that process, and this would not be the first time, right?
No, this is the Jordan Lake rules, as they've come to be known, have sort of been on hold since they were enacted or passed, I should say, in 2009. You know, backing up even more, you know, Jordan Lake was created in 1983, damming up the Haw River. And the watershed, if you look at a map, includes a huge portion of the Triad, Western Triangle, so a large area. As it has grown, over the areas have grown, development, housing developments have popped up. A lot of the runoff has gone into the watershed, and it has really hammered Jordan Lake to the point where in 2002 it was deemed federally impaired. And then by 2009, all those constituents had gotten together, people who built homes, businesses, environmentalists, lawmakers, all had gotten together and devised these Jordan Lake rules. And it's supposed to stop runoff, or at least, you know, hinder runoff from going into Jordan Lake, which, as you said, is a drinking source for many people. Ever since the political winds have changed here in the last 5 or 6 years, you've seen those rules get delayed over and over. A couple years ago, 2014, one of the solutions was to put these things called solar bees in Jordan Lake, would churn up some of the algae, but do nothing to really affect any of the pollution that was coming into the lake that was causing the algae. So those things have been put on hold. But what's happened just recently in the last couple of weeks, the budget for the Senate's version of the budget, would delay this again, not surprisingly. But in the Regulatory Reform Act, which is a separate from the budget, it would prohibit any local governments from enacting any rules that are in abeyance or delayed. So that would stop local communities like Cary, Morrisville, that get some of their water out of Jordan Lake, from doing anything to conform to the Jordan Lake rules. And that's new. That's a new thing. So this would be a pretty big change, and it's hidden pretty deep in the legislative process.
What is the argument? Why are lawmakers, as you say, I mean, this is a pretty important piece of water. Why are lawmakers trying to delay this further?
It's expensive. You know, changing development rules for existing and new construction is really expensive for developers. It's expensive for construction. It's expensive for local communities. Anybody who really owns property is affected by it, and it's expensive. So some of this expense is deemed to be unnecessary. Some is deemed to be necessary. So a lot of it has to do with that. These companies, these individuals, these communities don't want to pay so much money to clean up water. And if you're a community upriver, the Haw River in Alamance County or further up, you know, you're spending a lot of money and a lot of time and effort to make sure water isn't impaired for downriver folks in Cary and Morrisville. That can be a hard sell politically and locally.
Let's move to the coast. There's also a conversation about whether to raise the cap on terminal groins. These are structures intended to prevent coastal inlets from clogging with sand. How does the state use terminal groins now?
Terminal groins have been banned in North Carolina for decades. North Carolina and Oregon, in fact, are the only two states that ban terminal groins. There are a couple in North Carolina, most notably in Oregon Inlet on the north end of Pea Island and in the Bogue Banks, that keep sand from migrating off of a beach and into an inlet or shipping channel. There are a lot of places that would like to have these. There are places that, you know, the ends of islands are the sand is eroding and it's accreting into the inlets. So that is thought to be an opportunity to stop that sand from moving and to keep sand on the beach, and that saves private property along the coast as well. The Senate in 2013 wanted to get rid of this ban on terminal groins. Instead, what they did was they had four of these projects ongoing now, these pilot projects. They made those a little bit easier to build. They're in various stages, have yet to be built in four different places in North Carolina. But now especially the Senate and House leaders, from what we've heard, have come to an agreement to lift this cap on terminal groins. Now, scientists, coastal geologists say, look, it's sand. It's moving where it wants to move. Even if you put a rock wall there, it's still going to move somewhere. Other states have had really difficult situations. Florida, for example, has allowed these kinds of terminal groins on many different places in the beach. And what happens is landowners right next to each other, homeowners, start suing each other. Communities start suing each other. One of them puts up a terminal groin, which holds the sand nicely in front of their location, but erodes sand in other places. And that's what happens with these hardened structures. Erosion is going to take place somewhere if you keep sand in one place. So a lot of these terminal groins may end up getting built in the decades to come if the Senate and the House do come to this agreement. It's part of this agreement that we've heard is has to do with Oregon Inlet dredging. Oregon Inlet fills up all the time with sand, not allowing sport and recreational fishing and professional fishermen to get in and out. That's been a problem for a lot of years. Federal money has dried up for that project. Somehow the two are connected, at least legally in this sense, but they're not really connected in the real world.
So these terminal groins, are they mostly, do they benefit commercial industries, or do they benefit private property owners, as you say, recreational sport fishermen, people who want to live on the coast?
Both. But, you know, mostly terminal groin is about keeping sand on a beach. And I know it's a difficult distinction, but a jetty then keeps an inlet open. So a terminal groin is going to keep sand on an island. Figure Eight Island is one of the pilot projects, for example, that would allow homeowners there to still have a beach, because a lot of times their beach is wearing away and they got to use sandbags, which are unsightly and have their own environmental issues. So a lot of this would be about keeping, you know, private property owners and their investments intact and in place, literally by keeping the sand there.
Let's move on to solar energy. We're really kind of running the gamut here. Environmental advocates, they've been pushing the General Assembly to extend the solar energy tax credit. Is there any indication of whether lawmakers will agree to that?
It seems unlikely at this point. If you remember earlier this year, Governor McCrory signed a credit extension for projects that are already underway. That means they get another year at the end of 2016. But the Renewable Energy Investment Tax Credit is set to expire at the end of this year. It offers tax credits to new projects. It's a 35% state tax credit. It was put in place a couple years ago to jumpstart the industry in the state, and it's worked. North Carolina is fourth in the country in installed solar capacity. A lot of the companies that have invested a lot of money, a lot of the smaller solar investors, those who put solar panels on people's houses and those who put solar panels on businesses, smaller businesses, need to have this tax credit to really continue business as usual and continue to grow. The larger solar installations that we've seen that are getting built in certain places in North Carolina, Duke Energy's facilities, for example, they will probably be largely unaffected by this tax credit expiring at the end of this year. But those companies that invested a lot that are, you know, 10, 20 employees that are growing will definitely be affected.
And will that mean that we might see North Carolina slip from that fourth position if this tax credit isn't extended?
Without a doubt. North Carolina, other states are enacting solar tax credits if they don't have them already. They are attracting these businesses. You'll definitely see a lot of change in this. When North Carolina put it in place, North Carolina wasn't much of a player in solar. We don't necessarily have the best sun in the country. We have pretty good sun here. But other states will certainly enact. And it's interesting because these states are typically conservative states that don't offer a lot of tax credits on normal occasions. But out west, you're going to see a lot more tax credits. And a lot of those companies will start springing up, and you'll see that dynamic change quite a bit.
There is a proposal to limit the state's renewable energy portfolio standard, or REPs, as part of budget talks. Where do things stand on that provision?
Well, it's interesting. Because these budget negotiations are private, we don't know exactly where all these stands. This is something that passed in the House to limit renewable energy portfolio standard, and it has not passed the House. So it passed the House and has not passed the Senate. So what would happen is these renewable energy portfolio standards were put back into place in 2007. It requires Duke Energy and other utility companies to 10% of their sales, electricity sales, have to be renewable in 2018. The requirement increases to 12.5% by 2021. This rollback of it would make sure that it would stay at 6% and not get any bigger. Everything's up for grabs in the budget negotiations, even if it wasn't necessarily a budget item. We've seen a lot of policy make its way into these budget negotiations, mostly on the Senate side. A lot of House members not crazy about policy changes. This would be one of them if it extends.
Just lastly, will there be any political fallout from these decisions about environmental measures, or the kind of simply ways to bargain during budget negotiations?
Mostly the latter. But, you know, what's interesting, environmental issues don't typically play a large role in electoral politics. You know, you see education plays a big role, the economy a huge role, right? This might be a little bit different this year because of the coal ash spill happening under Governor McCrory's watch and him being a longtime employee previously of Duke Energy. You're going to see some attacks. Now, you've already seen a lot of ads attacking Senator Richard Burr on the environment running in North Carolina, paid for by a political action committee. So the environment is going to play a bigger role. It probably won't. If these changes happen in the legislature, you won't see anybody voted out because of the environmental decisions they made or didn't make. But at the state level, you're going to see environmental issues play a bigger role than they used to have, basically because of the coal ash issue and because of the national debates going on about the environment.
Dave DeWitt is WUNC's environment reporter. Thanks, Dave.
My pleasure.
Just ahead, author Craig McLaughlin previews his memoir, a story about growing up as a hemophiliac at a wildlife sanctuary. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.